do begin.
Hey, what is up, guys, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast. Before I get started, if you guys haven't done so, if you can go ahead and leave a review on Apple Podcast, hit that subscribe button, go on Spotify and hit that follow button. And of course, if you're involved in Instagram or any of these social media, go ahead and look up Social Primates and please give us a follow, share the content. And if you know anybody who's into podcasts, which I'm pretty sure you do by now, just let them know about Social Primate, find a way to sneak that into the conversation, and I will be forever, forever grateful. Moving forward, today my guest is Johnny Cisneros. He is a musician and creative all around. And today he joins me to talk about the experience as a musician during quarantine and how we readjust and readapt to our new normal. So I hope you guys enjoy this conversation. Today's music is actually brought to you by Johnny Cisneros with his song Let's Talk, one of his latest singles released, I think it was just a few weeks ago. So go ahead and listen to it. Check it out on all music platforms. When you can, go show some support. And as soon as we're back up and running at full capacity, go check him out at the live show once he gets his hired guns and all this stuff. And have a good time, man, because that's what it's all about. And as we move forward, just stay safe, stay sane, take care of the people around you, and make sure you take care of yourself. Without much further ado, I hope you guys enjoy the show. Thing.
All right.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Social Primate Podcast. Today, my guest is Johnny Cisneros, musician, artist, creative all around. What is up, dude? Thank you for coming on.
What's up, my man? I'm super excited to be here. Really stoked to be on the podcast.
Dude, I've been following your previous project, the Caracas, for a minute. Probably like a year or 2 years ago, I was sharing some of the music as well on the podcast.
Yeah, that's actually how I came across you, because I saw that you shared my page. I'm like, oh, that's dope. Or my music. And I'm like, that's dope. Like, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts. So I was like, oh, I'm eventually going to reach out to him and see if we could work something out. So it's crazy that fast forward like a year or two, we're finally making it happen. So, yeah.
So the people who don't know you, is can you give us a little bit of background about the music that you've been doing and what you recently released?
Yeah, sure. So I am a like multi-genre artists. I'm involved in a lot of projects, some of which involve other members and bands, and two of which is just me getting creative in specific genres. So I just launched my solo project because I've been in so many bands and I'm like, you know what? I kind of want to do something. Why don't focus on a single genre and I can just release whatever I want and like not care or think twice. It's like, oh, is this indie rock enough? Is this indie pop enough? And so I thought it appropriate to just, you know, name my project just after my name. So if you're a fan of like my music, you're a fan of me as a person, you know, going through all these like genres and whatnot. So my current project that I'm working on, I just released a single called Let's Talk on the 18th. And it's a combination of like indie pop, dream pop, bedroom pop. Because I like, you know, pop and like, I think like a producer sometimes. So that's me exploring that. But before I transitioned into, you know, that project, I was doing the Caracals, the Caracals, you could say it both ways. But that was more indie rock. So that was, you know, your basic two guitars, bass, drums, you know, inspired by like 2000s bands like The Strokes, Arctic Monkeys and everything. Mm-hmm. And I did that for 2 years. And then after a while, I was like, man, I have this whole catalog of like this poppy stuff that, you know, I like bands like Tame Impala and, you know, mixing it with other like pop. And I'm like, that I want to explore. So that's kind of what led to my solo project. And that's kind of what led me to reach out to you so we can talk about that stuff.
Yeah, so we can make this happen. Yeah. Now, dude, well, I got to say, first of all, you can tell right from the get-go, if people have listened to your music, you can tell the variety of the things that you were, first of all, experimenting on. And then again, you're playing around with it. Like, it looks like you know what you're doing and you're just molding it into these different new sound, you know? And that's honestly why I'm intrigued, the whole idea that somebody can take their love for music and try to interpret it through different mediums in a sense.
No, yeah, totally, totally.
And with that being said, so with the Caracals, how you said that was around 2 years, right?
Yeah, that's around 2 years that I released an EP, a 4-song EP. Yeah.
Okay, and before that, how did you get involved with the whole idea of creating music? Is that something that was instilled on you?
Dude, okay, so my story goes back to when I was little. Like, basically, it started when I would go perform with my dad as a mariachi. So, yeah, my dad's a full-time mariachi, and he's still gigging to this day. And so, yeah, man, like, he's my biggest inspiration. I'm actually working on a song with him with a solo project. But, I mean, I could talk on that, but that's still in the works. You know, like, I still haven't hashed it out, but it's got a lot of cool sounds. But anyway, so it all started with like my dad being a mariachi, and like, you know, I would perform at family parties. So he'd like, you know, get me to sing and stuff. So I would sing songs and like the family would love it. And then eventually during summers, when I didn't go to summer school, like, you know, most kids do, I was gigging at restaurants with my dad playing the maracas. So I was just going like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's how it all started. And then eventually I was like, I picked up the guitar, and then, you know, my dad started teaching me scales and like basic chords because I really liked it. And then I kind of stopped for a while. It wasn't until high school where, you know, as a high school kid, like a lot of, you know, angst, just wanting to express yourself and wanting to, you know, do something that really calls to you. And that's when I discovered the Strokes, and that was because of my brother. So my brother gave me my older brother gave me my first Strokes album. But let me preface it, I used to listen to like bands like System of a Down, you know, Rage Against the Machine, you know, anything that was on K-Rock, you know, Red Hot Chili Peppers, anything that was on K-Rock, I'm like, this is so cool. Anyway,
yeah, those were the cool days of K-Rock.
exactly what it's actual rock. You know what I mean? But anyway, so my bro was like, you know what? You need to listen to this band. And he gave me a Room on Fire. Actually, dude, this is how big of a fan I am. It's on my desk. You know,
that's probably my favorite outside of Is This It? That's my second. Oh, that is the second album, but it's my second top album, dude.
Yeah, dude. That one for me, like, I love Is This It? And like, you know, there's that whole like, what album was better, Is This It or Room on Fire? But I personally think that the Strokes solidified their sound with Room on Fire. You know what I mean? And like, you know, Is This It? You know, it was like, it still sounded demo-y to me. You know, it was still phenomenal. Hard to explain on there. But Room on Fire was like, holy shit. Like, these are the fucking guys. You know what I mean? It made me excited to listen to what's next. But anyway, after listening to the Strokes' Room on Fire, I was like, I need to pick up an electric guitar. You know what I mean? And that's when I started trying to learn like Reptilia solos and like, you know, really asked my parents for a guitar, got my guitar. Then I started, you know, a few bands, but this wasn't until like junior year. And then my first band was in senior year, but then I went off to college, which will lead to the Let's Talk conversation, but about that song. Yeah. But anyway, so after that, that's pretty much my trajectory of how I pretty much got into music.
Dude, it's cool, first of all, that you had that support, because I know when I was a kid, we were trying to do bands, you know, I was like 13, 14, and like play fucking bass and shit.
Right.
Or just like three chords. And then, but you have, at least for me, it was like, where's the music going to take you?
It's
like,
right.
Mom, leave me alone, man. It's not a phase.
Yeah.
Right. Totally, eventually, he became a phase. He kicked it out of me, man.
Yeah, but it happened. It happens, man.
But you know, you had that support, so I think that that definitely helps that out. And again, it, it gives you the ability to just experiment with different sounds, you know?
Right, right, dude. Exactly.
And so moving forward now, so now you got your own solo project. Now right. that you've had the taste of what it is to like do your own thing and do the unit thing, is there a difference in terms of how you approach these two things? Like, are you, do you feel more creative now that you're on your own?
Yes, I do. I make decisions quicker. You know, and I don't think about so much about the end product, and it's more of in the moment product, you know what I mean? And so, whereas with groups, it's like you go back and forth and then you wait for like a final reply, then, you know, with the solo, it's like, no, this is what I want to go forward with and this is what I'm doing. And then, you know, so, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's interesting because I mentioned it before before we started here. You know, I had a similar experience where I had to work with a group of people, and now that I do this podcast on my own, it's a one man show here.
Oh wow!
You know, I'm basically doing everything, putting everything together, and it's cool and stuff. You know, because you have that control to do whatever you want. You know,
right,
but there is a small part of me that's like, man, I wish I had my friend here, you know, like right. wish I had my homie here just to kind of like bounce ideas off of.
Right.
So, you know, there's those pros and cons.
Yeah. Well, to go off on that, like that's another pro, and it's a big pro. Like right now I'm also in a project called Walla. We do indie pop stuff. I'm working with three very talented musicians, and they made me step up my game. You know, some of them went to Berklee College of Music, so they're trained. And I'm self-taught. So I, you know, I feel like there was like a big learning curve for me. And it's like, all right, I got to step up my game. Like I'm, you know, I'm a pretty good singer and like I know how to, you know, perform and everything. So that's kind of like, you know, working with them. It's like, okay, I got that down. Now let's get the technical side down. Now, you know, now let's work on my voice and whatnot. But yeah, to go back on that, like the pros about working with them is that they add these elements that I would have never thought in a song. You know, like one of the members adds like textures to the song. Like there's risers and faders and like little guitar bits that's like at minute 133 or whatever. You know what I mean? That they just throw it in there like a little sprinkle. And those things are the things you miss as a, at least for me as a solo artist, because you know, I'm already thinking of like however many layers, you know, like synths, guitars, vocals, backup vocals and all that. But with someone else, it's like, OK, now we could do like this little texture device to make the song really pop. So that's a pro that that kind of escapes you as a solo artist.
Just to touch base on that, I think that's interesting because sometimes I'm listening to this song like there's this band called Boy Harsher and they're like dark wave or something.
Yeah, I think I've heard of them. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, point is, at some point I hear, put my earphones on and I hear like this whole new small, I don't know what it is, but it's in the back of the fucking song. And you're like, dude, I never heard that. And that just made that song even fucking better.
Right. You know? Right. Like one thing that I like to do now that I'm doing a solo and it's kind of like that's helped me out as a solo artist is I literally listen to songs over and over again, but force myself to listen to the single instrumentation. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, there's some stroke songs where I listen to the bass or whatever. I'm like, whoa, I never knew that it was that complicated. It almost, you listen to stroke songs and they sound so basic. Like, yeah, I could do that. But then you really listen to them, like I was saying, and it's just like, whoa, there's more to it than I originally thought. And that helps sharpen my skills when I go back to writing the bass for a song, because then it's like, oh, okay. In the intro, it was one structure. And in the first verse is one structure, but in the second verse on the second part of the song, he switches and inverses the notes. So now if it's like, you know, a certain melody, now he inverses it or whatever. And then it sounds completely different. And it's just like, those are the little elements that, you know, make a song really, you know, stick, you know, like the earworm type thing that sticks to your, you know, your head or whatever. Yeah.
Those are the things that usually you memorize and you're like, you know, you know the lyrics years later after, you know, without even looking at the screen.
Right. Exactly.
I know it's funny because I'm a huge Strokes fan and Julian Casablancas has The Voids.
Yeah,
which he does. Again, I looked up to the dude, but I can't get into The Voids. I'm sorry, people. I just can't. There's a few songs, but I'm like,
yeah,
bring back the band.
Yeah, I know, right? Seriously. The latest album wasn't too bad, though. I forget what it was called.
From Julian? Julian
Casablancas? Yeah, and The Voids. Ah, okay, yeah. Okay. The first one, I was just like, you're right, it's very experimental. It's like experimental rock. And I'm like, I remember taking an ex-girlfriend to see them. And she was just like, this is the Strokes, or like the Strokes from. I'm like, yeah, but you know, it's like, let's keep an open mind. But like, yeah, it was a little, very experimental. That's why the latest album, I was like, okay, like I can get into this. You can kind of hear some Stroke influence on this, but yeah.
No, but I think that's important. At the end of the day, you got to keep playing around with the music. How long can you stay with the same sound?
Right.
It's like one of my best examples is like the Ramones. Unfortunately, you can see the change in the type of music that they started creating, like that raw energy. Mm-hmm. And towards the end, you could tell it was massively produced. And
yeah, right. Exactly. It happens to a lot of bands.
Yeah.
And a lot of artists, especially like in the indie or bedroom pop realm, like they start off with in their freaking bedroom. And then they start going into these studios where the sound changes drastically,
Yeah.
So it's kind of crazy.
Now, do you think there's a reasoning? What is your opinion on the reasoning why, like, sometimes they have to let all these massive producers come in and basically have creative control of the final product?
Yeah. Are you asking me like what the reasoning is, like why would they let them do that, or like why does that happen? Or
hypothetical situation, let's say somebody comes up to you and they're like, Johnny, we're gonna give you $1 million deal, but we're gonna have to bring some people in to basically tweak the stuff to the point where it's not necessarily you anymore.
All right. Well, first I'd be like, do I get to keep my masters? If so, then let's fucking go, baby. Let's go. I'm starving over here, man. I'm starving. No, I'm kidding. It's funny because like I can see why it happens. And let me explain it in a different way, because I've worked with producers, some awesome producers. And like there's this one producer where I went in, I'm really rough around the edges because, I self-produce everything, but this guy's worked with some, really top acts, like, the bands like Chicano Batman and bands like that. Right. So I went in and like, I had this idea in my head because I recorded and I spent, weeks, maybe even months on a song. And I went in, and when he put his input, it changed it a bit. And in my head, I was like, this isn't what I wrote. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know why it sounds different. But then like he pointed out, like, like sometimes he coined he didn't coin it, but like he mentioned the term like demoitis. And like, I'm like, what's demoitis? It's like, it's when you're so transfixed in your own demo that you can't think of outside of what the song could be. Right. And so that kind of changed my tune. I'm like, oh, you're right. Like, if this was just me producing it myself, then it would make sense to change the song to match. But now I'm bringing in other people, now it's their like interpretation of what I'm trying to do. So I kind of like let go of the reins and I'm like, okay, let's go with it. And looking back, it made the sound a lot better. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It elevated it because it added elements that I don't think I would have pulled off by myself. And I'll give you an example. There's this song that I have with the Caracals. It's called Run, or R-U-N. And it's a heavy song. Like, I was really inspired at the time, like by like Rage and like, forget the other band. Anyway, so it's like, I was playing the bass and it sounded choppy because I'm not a bassist. I'm a multi-instrumentalist. But then my buddy tried and he played and it was soft and, it had some vibe to it. But then the producer played and it added so much raw energy. And we were all playing the same notes. And I learned like a big lesson that day. It's like sometimes it is the talent and the interpretation of a player. Everyone's got a different way of playing it. And I don't know what he did. But the song, like, if you guys go check it out, it's R-U-N. I released it a long time ago. The bass riff is so heavy and so badass. I'm like, I don't think I would have pulled that off. You know what I mean? So I guess there are, like, sometimes pros and cons to having people come in and produce. but sometimes it can elevate it. You know what I mean? Sometimes it can make it better. But I do hear about stories where it just changes the whole project and then they kind of lose their voice. So it's a tricky line. You know what I mean?
For you being an experience where you have to play these songs when you go to shows, have you gotten to the point where you like get bored of playing the same song over and over again?
No, because I don't play enough shows. Okay. I don't, I get hired guns, man. So if I ever want to play with the Caracals, I got to start hitting up friends. Be like, hey, man, you down to do this? You down to jump on bass? You down to jump on guitar? Shows in 2 weeks. You got to learn it quick, you know? Yeah. And like same thing with my solo project, Johnny Cisneros. I have a gig coming up on Saturday and I contacted all my buddies that, you know, have performed with me as the Caracals. Hey, man, another hired gun gig. You down to perform with me? So it's very tough because I got to, you know, schedule out the dates and it's not a band where it's like, all right, guys, let's rehearse, you know, regular practice on Thursday. No, it's like, hey, man, can you do it? Can you do it? And then if it doesn't happen, I have to hit up the person, you know what I mean? Be like, hey, man, I couldn't form the band, you know, I'm sorry. Like, I can't perform. So that's how. Yeah. Yeah. So I never get bored because I don't play them enough.
No, I get what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy, though. You know, it's easier for people to oversee the amount of work it takes to push your content and yourself as a brand, as a group.
Oh,
like,
man.
Sure. I mean, again, the a pro is with working with people is that you have four people in a collective where they all kind of care about the project enough to like spread the word compared to just the one, you know?
Right.
But yeah, dude, that's interesting. Now that I've thought about that, like you have to get people if they're fucking free and be like, yo,
yeah,
pull through
every fucking show, bro. Every show. I don't have a band. Like the only band that it's the guys, it's Walla. But right now we're focused a little more on just the writing aspect. So we're not really focused on shows because the writing aspect just takes so much time and energy. And you know,
for sure.
we're really, you know, just kind of focused on getting the EP out and then eventually we'll figure out shows. But for Johnny Cisneros and Caracals, man, it's always let's pull in some favors now, you know. And it, you know, like I can't do every show, like, you know, it's got to be like, you know, like a show that, you know, has a great organizer or it's like, you know, well put together, then I make the effort because it's a lot of effort, you know what I mean? And it's a lot
of course.
So yeah.
Well, with that being said, like from my understanding, of course, everybody knows COVID happened last year or it's still kind of we're still in the process of it.
Right.
Like how did that affect you? I know you guys as a Caracals were going to have like this tour happening.
Yeah, man.
And then you got all screwed over.
Dude, that's a wild story, man. Like you don't even know. OK, so like you mentioned earlier, I'm like a one man record label, basically.
Yeah.
And like everything, PR, booking and everything. So it's always been my dream to go on tour. I've never been on tour. I've performed in different places, cities and whatnot, but I've never gotten to say that I've been on tour. And I'm like, if there's one thing I do before whatever happens, I want to say that I went on tour in my life. So then I finished the Caracals EP. It got a lot of great reception. A lot of people loved it, you know, and people were reaching out like, you know, for promo and whatnot. So then I was like, you know what? I have the music and I think the guys that were my hired guns are down to join me if I were to put a tour together. And from my experience from putting on shows, you need a month of time to book all the bands and to solidify and to, you know, create the promo materials like a flyer and to announce in time so that people block it off on their calendars. So I'm like, all right, I'm trying to do a tour. I probably need like around like half a year, like 6 months or something. So I was like, you know what? I got it into my head. I'm like, I'm freaking determined. I'm going to make this happen for myself one way or the other. So I was like, okay, I don't know how I'm going to do it. I reached out to a friend who had a kind of experience in putting shows together. He's like a manager for a couple great acts. And he kind of gave me some pointers and stuff. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to fucking go for it. And I was like, he started helping me out. And basically we mapped it out. I'm like, I want to hit Seattle. I want to hit Portland. I want to hit San Francisco. And then I want to do a badass show in like LA or Orange County, which is where I'm from. And I went for it, dude. 6 months. I started emailing venues and waiting for them to come back every day after work. I would put in several hours. Hey, you know, this is my band. This is my EPK. I would love to perform. You know, I'm going to do advertising. I'll do Facebook ads to get people there. You know, I'll, you know, definitely sell tickets and whatnot. And I would have to wait. Some people would just not respond. Some people would get back to me and be like, all right, cool. You know, and then other, well, okay, well, before those, some people would be like, we're booked for that day and that's it. And then, you know, other people would be like, you know, can you sell tickets and whatnot? And so I'm like, damn, okay. And I was getting no replies, right? For the first 2 months, no reply, bro. I'm not even kidding. Like, imagine every night sending an email and getting no's. There was a point, in me where I'm like, am I getting too like in over my head? Like, you know, I obviously don't have, like, I have presence out there in Seattle and all these cities, but they want to see like, okay, you've got hundreds of fans, you know, a lot from the city and stuff. Why are we going to give you like, you know, that, you know, you have some traction and stuff, but you don't have that presence. Right. And so, dude, after the second or third month, I started getting like, they started trickling in. It was a 7-day tour. And I remember getting like, I think, I forget what venue. I think it was Portland. It was a small venue because I went from top tier, like imagine like your observatories, right? Yeah. Like in Santa Ana. That's what I started off with. And when those would say no, I'm like, okay, middle. You know what I mean? Like, you like the Continental Room in Fullerton. I don't know if you've been there. That's like middle to top, you know, they're doing well. And then your lower tiered ones. I can't think of examples, but just imagine like a small dive bar, right?
Okay.
With maybe a stage. And I was starting to get these emails saying, all right, cool. Yeah, I can give you the date. And the toughest part is that I already had the date set up. So if that date didn't work, it would screw everything up because then I can't go to Seattle, to San Francisco, and then back to Portland, and then back to, you know, LA. Hey, so anyway,
dude.
And I'm telling you, this is 3 months of emailing, going hard, like, you know, EPK and everything, no responses, dude. Cutting it down to the wire, it was the last month and I wasn't getting the dates, you know, according to my thing. And so I was like, you know what? I was thinking I don't know if I should just pull the plugs. I kid you not, I sent over 100 plus emails. And dude, this is like, you know, and this is scheduling and booking. You know what I'm saying? You can't just like, if they say yes, you can't be like, just kidding, because then you burn that bridge. You know what I mean? And then, and so I was just like, you know, I was getting stressed out and I'm like, you know, damn, I don't know if I bit off more than I can chew. And in the last month, I got like some dope show, like all lining up at almost in the same week. I got a show in Seattle at like a dope venue locked in to kick off the tour. And then Portland fell in line. And then another show got back to me right after the Portland one. And then after the Portland one, I got a badass San Francisco one that was opening up for this band called the Strawberry Girls. I don't know if you've heard of them, but it was a bunch of dope acts at the Brick and Mortar. And it's a really dope venue. It's got a big reputation. I had to sign contracts and everything to perform. And I was opening up for this big ass gig. And I'm like, holy fuck, it's happening. And my buddy who plays guitar is a fan of the Strawberry Girls. And like, he likes them that like so much so that he's bought their vinyl, gone to see them. So I was like, bro, we're opening up for this band called Strawberry Girls. He's like, what? Like, that's fucking insane. I'm like, whoa. Like, yeah, like, I don't know. That's who we were. You know, we're opening up for them in San Francisco, Brick and Mortar. And he was like, dude, it's going to be wild. And like, and I was just, you know, so stoked. And then after that, we got like a show in like, I forget what city. It might have been like Fresno or up in like the NorCal area. And everything got locked into place, bro. Everything was locked in. The guys were super stoked. We were rehearsing. I got like a bunch of gear that I was going to use on stage, you know, and like, you know, we got like everything planned out. We got the van, we got everything locked into place. Right. And then I want to say it was 3 weeks. Okay. This was in March. This was happening in March. Like 1.5 years. How long has the pandemic been going on? 2 years. Anyway. Yeah. So basically in March, dude, in March of when the pandemic began, you started seeing reports, this virus that, you know, that is spreading like wildfire, that is super deadly, is spreading all over like China and places like that. And like, I remember in the group chat, we were already kind of texting like, hey, like, have you guys heard about this? Yeah, it's insane. So wild. Whatever. It's over there. And then you start hearing, oh, people in like the East Coast are getting infected and it's spreading like crazy. And then I was just like, all right, a little worried, but that's in the East Coast. We still don't know much. You know what I mean? And then you start hearing about like the boats. I'm like, whatever, like about so many people getting infected. And like,
oh, yeah, the cruises.
Yeah, yeah. And like, you started hearing about that. And I'm like, okay, that's when I had to sit down and really think, okay, like, I don't know what's going to happen, but I told the guys I'm still game for going and I want to make this happen because you guys have no idea how hard I worked, how many sleepless nights, like fucking hundreds of emails, coordinating everything, putting it all together by myself, you know, and pitching and everything. I'm still game to go. We're going to do it. And then we hear Seattle, which was one of our stops, had the most COVID deaths at the time. Because of the senior home got hit. And then that's when I was like starting to really like internalize, like I didn't want to even think about this tour isn't going to happen. And this isn't going to happen because I just spent 6 months for something that I wanted so bad, like most of my life anyway. And so Seattle happens. And then I'm like, now I'm starting to think, okay, I really have to think about this. And I told the guys, hey, I am still game to go on this tour, but we can cut out Seattle because we don't know what's happening and do the rest of the dates. Mm-hmm. And all the guys were like, you know what? We're down, you know, like we want to do this. And like at the time, you know, it sounds foolish. People were like, you're fucking crazy. Like, you don't know about this virus. And I was like, you don't understand what I went through to put this together. And you don't understand how bad I've wanted this since I started a band in high school. And now that I got a 7-day tour, 3 different states, 7 different cities, like I'm doing this, you know? And then literally it was Sunday night and everyone agreed, let's do it. Let's go. So I'm like, all right, tomorrow morning we head out. Mm-hmm. We go do the long trek to, I think, you know, this it was Portland because we weren't sure if Seattle was going to happen. And that morning I wake up, California goes into lockdown. So all bars and restaurants are officially closed as an order of the state. And I was just like, I like my stomach, like I just felt, and like I, like there was just like an emptiness in my stomach. I was like, no, this is not happening. That whole like the next couple of weeks, I was like, this isn't happening. Like, like, you know, like I was just like, this isn't happening. I couldn't believe it. And like that whole week, I was just, this didn't happen. Like, this is absolutely insane. But it was conflicting feelings because it was like, I'm also worried about the health of people. I'm also worried about, is this actually as deadly as they say? I'm worried about, you know, because at the time they were saying, you know, older people are vulnerable, people with like pre-existing conditions and whatnot. So I'm just kind of like, oh man, you know, I have family members that I interact with. So I was so conflicted. I didn't know what to feel. And sure enough, like that week goes by and then the days we were supposed to play, we would keep messaging, oh man, today we should have been in Seattle. Oh, today, fuck, we should have been in Portland. Today we could have been doing that fucking show in San Francisco. Today should have been Fresno. And today was the homecoming show in LA. Anyway, dude, I couldn't do music for a while. Like my energy and my will to like, to kind of power through it just kind of vanished. I was just like, we went into lockdown. Everyone was in quarantine. No one knew what was going on. Everyone was afraid. And it was just like, I didn't even write anything. The whole first half of quarantine, I was like, I just watched 6 months of work just go like like that. Like I have the I have like the tour poster and like, and I just like keep looking at it. I keep looking at it, and like I was bummed, dude. I didn't pick up my guitar. I didn't write anything. I didn't feel inspired. I was just like, just freaking at home watching the news for updates, like everyone. Mm-hmm. And it took me like, I want to say a good 6 months to finally be like, accept it and to be like, well, there goes the tour. You know what I mean? Oh. There goes something you worked hard. You know what I mean? And like, it was hard to accept. And, you know, there was, I did get a lot of support from like friends and family. Like, you know, one of my family members was like, hey man, if you did it once, you could do it again. You know what I mean? So, but yeah, man, that was the story of the, it was called the Dustin Honey tour. Yeah, dude, I need to show you the poster. It was so badass too.
Man, the whole time you're telling the story, it's like the movies that you see that you know how it's gonna end.
Yeah.
And then you're just making it like your whole story is uplifting and it just gets worse and you're like, fuck, this is not gonna end good.
Yeah, no, dude. That's how it was. But like I said, it was a conflict of health and like your life like at that time. And something you really, really wanted. You know what I mean? So it was like, I was so torn and confused. I didn't even know what to feel. It's like, well, you know, this is for the best, for, you know, to be healthy and, you know, to avoid or whatever, any serious, you know, pitfalls or whatever.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's better, you know, better to be safe than sorry to an extent, you know, but in this case, for sure, it was one of those things that, like you mentioned, right when it was happening, nobody knew what the fuck was going on. So it was easy for us to kind of be in that state of mind where we were just constantly like, anxious. And especially when this kind of stuff happens, you're like, fuck, what do I do now?
Right. And no one, like, there wasn't anyone that you could really see like examples of what they were going to do. Dude, I gotta keep telling these stories, man, because it was so wild. All right, so check it out. The 2 weeks or 3 weeks before everything was solidified, I could finally rest. I'm like, what I could do is done. Like, this is as far as I can take it. Like, at that point, all I want to do is show up to those venues and perform my fucking heart out. Anyway, that's when you start hearing the virus spreading and everything. And then I remember specifically saying to my friends, if Coachella cancels, that will be the marker that this shit is serious and that everything else is gonna be fucked. If Coachella cancels, dude, sure enough, like 1 week before, Coachella cancels their annual festival, and I was like, holy fuck. If a multi-million dollar festival is losing out on multi-million dollars, you know what I'm saying? That's how you know that this is something that we've never experienced and that shit is gonna, like, you know, I don't know, cancel and stuff. So I just remember thinking, I remember seeing the news, like someone said to me, it's like Coachella cancels, and then all the other ones, Lollapalooza cancels, then this cancels, then that cancels. I was like, no. And I'm like, no, we're still going. It's still the West Coast. You know, we're going to make it happen. And then it was literally until they said state mandate that bars close. And I'm like, that's all the venues were playing. So
everything just fell apart. Fuck, man. See, what I like to think though, now in essence, right? So everything in your perspective was falling apart in terms of what was going on, right? The effort that you had put into. Now, after you had the time to process that for, you know, say half of the quarantine, like what was that new fucking fire in you that was like, you know what? Fuck it, I'm gonna keep going.
Well, let me be honest, man. I didn't get that fire until this past year, or like these last 4 to 5 months. So it took me like maybe like a year to get fully fired up. You know, after the tour cancellation, I put music, like, I can't even say it. Basically, I just didn't work as hard on it, you know? And so after the 6 months, you know, I started looking at my songs and seeing what I was doing. But literally, it took finally understanding, like, you know, the virus and what was going on, and like people starting to do lives, and then I started to do a Saturday, every month segment, or every Saturday I'd perform live, and that kind of started, you know, bringing my spirits back up. I also brought my dad on to guest star, and people loved him. He was doing a lot of like classic Spanish hits.
Yeah, I saw one of those. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It was super cool. Yeah,
and you'll be doing like covers too and stuff.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So I did like, I try to spread it out because I have a lot of material, but there's only so many songs I have, you know? So I would do one song every show. But then my dad, I was like, one day I'm like, you know what? I'm going to bring my dad in because his shows got canceled too. So he was bummed out as well because it affected him too. He's a full-time gigging musician and now he can't do that. So I told him, hey, Dad, you want to do, you know, some lives with me? We perform for the internet and we just have a good time and people interact. And that kind of started getting my spirits back, and like people were like really enjoying it. And it's crazy how that grew. Like I remember when I first started it off, there was like, you know, 5 to 10 people or like true fans kind of joining my lives. By the end, we were like getting close, like in the hundreds. And it was kind of crazy because like people were hearting, and like strangers that I didn't even know were logging on. And I started like this fucking trend called like, you would just toast me. And so I'm like, all right, you got to join my live and we take a shot together while we're like, you know, socially distancing. And so many people started calling in. I was like, holy shit. Like I started getting really drunk in these. And like, I'm like, all right, I need to backtrack what I started, because like, if like, you know, once I'm had like 5 people trying to call in, and I'm like, yo, like that's 5 shots I'm taking. So
say, anyway. I know you're going to be all like, yeah, you're going to be shit-faced on live. Like, hey, wake up, Johnny.
Yeah, exactly. I would be like slurring and missing notes and everything. So anyway, so that kind of started me trying to get back into stuff. And then eventually when we got a hold of the pandemic and we knew it was like a waiting game and we were learning more information and whatnot, my mind started getting more at ease, and especially towards the health of family members and whatnot. And then, you know, fast forward until like kind of now when things are opening back up, it was the last portion of quarantine where I was like, this isn't me, man. Like I'm a go-getter. I like to, you know, I like to be involved. I like, you know, being out there performing, you know. So that's when like, you know, something switched in me. It's like, I gotta get back to it. And I gotta do what I said that I was going to do. My plan was to go on this tour with the Caracals and then launch my solo project. But since the Caracals fell apart, like I fell apart. And then it's like, and then I started building it back up. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm going to stick to my word in what I said I was going to do. And I'm going to launch my solo thing. So fast forward to now.
Sick.
I got my shit together. You know, luckily, you know, I'm fine. You know, healthy is same thing with like the fam and everything. So I'm like, all right, it's time to get, you know, all this stuff together and release some music. So
I mentioned this in another podcast before, but it's like that story, like it's like a hero's journey type of story.
Oh, man.
Every time 100%. I hear this, you know,
100%.
It's like you're coming back fucking stronger, like, you know, more like you dealt with the pressure of having to deal with this whole, you know, shit that happened.
Right.
And now you're like a little clear headed and now you're fucking coming back as by, you know, as yourself.
Yeah. And it was kind of like, you're right. I like how you put that, because it was like I had to go through that, the cancellation and the tour thing and the pandemic and all of that and the doubt and whatever, to get like the energy to launch the solo stuff, you know. And I'm not gonna lie, it's been like a lot of work and it's definitely like, whoa, all right. This is what it was like before the pandemic. Now it's time to get out there, you know, put yourself out there again. So, yeah.
It takes work. It takes especially the will for you to keep your word, you know, because it's easy for, you know, every year people are like, new me, new year, or whatever it is. No, new year, new me.
Yeah.
But, you know, to just make that change when it's not related to a new year or anything.
Right.
You know, it's the integrity you have for yourself and that conviction that you're putting in, you know?
See, I didn't even think about it that way. You're right. Cause I wasn't like waiting for the new year. I'm like, something just snapped and I'm like, it's go time. You know what I mean? And like, yeah, like I literally put the song together and I released it and it's doing really well right now, you know? So I'm really stoked about that.
Yeah, and it looks like you're working on a video too right now, right?
Yeah, man. Yeah, launching that. Actually, if you're free and you're in the East Hollywood area, you're more than you're invited. It's this Saturday.
Oh, sick.
Yeah. So
it's like a pool party or something.
It's
right?
It's a pool party, exactly. It's the Talk pool party. So I'm gonna screen it to a select few of people that want to come through, and I'm gonna show it to them. It's gonna be like a video release party. But I'm releasing it the following Friday. I believe it's like the 9th. I forget.
Friday's the 9th. Yeah, next week.
Yeah, but that's also my directorial debut. I directed that bad boy.
Sick. Yeah. Damn, yeah, look at you, man. Fuck.
Yeah, well, I mean, I got a lot of help from some of my housemates that are really talented and they work in film. But I was like, yo, I want to direct, like, you know what I mean? I want to experience that and like storyboard and do all of that. So it's a directorial debut as well.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. Okay. So now you're working on this. Was this just part of like a larger EP, or you're looking to do like a full album with it? Cause right now it's just a single, right?
Yeah. EP, okay. Man. Like, just taking into account like the way the music industry is going, and like it seems like EPs and singles are the way to go, just so you know, you can have your audience focus on a single and drive as many, you know, listens as you can to each single. Okay. You know what I mean? So
interesting. Yeah, because I remember as a kid, you know, I'll buy albums and they'll have like 14, possibly 20 songs. And then as time passed, it's like 9 now or like 8.
Yeah, man. Well, I don't know how I feel about the single release strategy. I'm just, you know, I'm just adapting to the way the industry is now.
Yeah, you of know course. What and I you, mean? You have to as well. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, I've seen, you know, artists talk about like how they've experimented. They're like, yo, I dropped an album and the first song I release gets all these plays, but then it starts dwindling down as you go further down the album. So then he switched to strategy. He started releasing singles and promoting the crap out of them. And it just like, you know, shot up and like, and I guess that's just the industry trend. And, you know, like with such short attention spans nowadays and all that, like we're kind of catering to that culture. So
I mean, if it makes sense, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I think for the most part, just not because we're in the internet area, but there's like a lot of like, there's, I don't know if Bandcamp is, I know, no, wait, sorry. Bandcamp's the one that usually supports the artists a lot more than like, there was this other one. I don't know. I've heard some other shit about it, but I mean, my whole point was just like, it makes it easier for people to just like, people like yourself to create that music, take the time to craft it and master and make it look fucking, you know, precious.
Yeah.
And just release it to the pop, to the masses immediately. Yeah. You know, there's no middleman or anything.
Right.
For the most part.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's what I do. Like, you know, I get to keep all my royalties, and that's the plus side. But yeah, the caveat to that is that you also have to promote everything yourself. So
Of course. Yeah.
That's the difficult part.
Yeah, so. It's funny because yesterday I was putting the video up to promote the episode, and fucking Instagram works very weird, because the first upload I did, it had like, I don't know, I had like a couple thousand, like 2,000 views or something. I took it down because I saw something that I fucked up, like the editing. Yeah. I was like, I was working out trying to upload this video, multitask.
I know how that goes.
And then I took it down. I was like, fuck, I made a mistake. Uploaded again, and then it went to half. And I was like, dude, like, what the
dude? Like, there's these things that I'm learning as well. Like, also, when you post something and you edit it also affects the algorithm.
It does.
So now, every time I post, I'm super careful. I'm like, all right, I check everything, make sure everything's spelled correctly. I tagged whoever I needed to tag. All the info's good to go. I sit on it and then revisit it, and then I post. Man.
Fuck, I'm going to have to take that strategy, man. Cause...
Yeah, no, bro. I mean, that doesn't mean that I'm not prone to error, because also, like, learning, like you said, the algorithm. I also try to post early because, you know, if you post at 7 at night, you know, sure, there's going to be people that are looking at their phones, but you know, there's countless articles that say posting at around noon or whatever, and there's certain times and stuff, and those are all like, there's certain truth to them, so I just follow them.
Yeah, I find it curious with the insights, because you know, for the podcast you have a business page, well at least I have, you have to have I think a business page too, right? I think that's what it's considered.
Yeah,
so you can share your stuff.
Yeah,
I find it interesting because it shows you the insights. So in a sense, you're kind of seeing the behavior of your audience or the people who engage with you, right? But then, you know, it's as an individual, I'm like, nah, like I'm an individual. Nobody can read me. But it's like, nah, I know what you're doing, man. I know what times you're active.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
that removes a whole.
They got our information. That's all. Like targeting is crazy now. So
yeah, they know what they're doing. But so, I mean, outside of the July 3rd, well, this Saturday coming up, do you have anything planned for like appearances or like performances? Because I know you have to get your,
contracts
together.
I know, man. I know. Like, get the hired guns ready to go.
Hired guns. That's what it was.
Yeah. The hired guns, the guys that you call last minute, learn it in 2 weeks, and let's go. Showtime, baby. and other than that, man, no, I have gotten hit up for shows already. Like even some of the venues that I was supposed to perform on that tour have hit me up. They're like, hey man, like the offer still stands. We'll pay you the same amount. The contract still lies, you know, and we'll take care of you and stuff. And I'm like, fuck, like if only it was for my solo thing that I'm trying to focus on, because I don't want to spread myself too thin, because I'm only one guy, man. Like, I can't do everything, you know. I can't be like, all right, guys, Carrie Cows now. All right, Johnny Snowstep. All right, let's jump on Walla. You know what I mean? So as far as future shows, there may be trickles of them here and there, but nothing in the books right now. As of now, that's the only, you know, solidified date.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, that's cool. It's a start. You know, again, the whole idea is that you started the project, like you didn't give up on it.
Right,
and you're trying to find just means of it succeeding.
Right, exactly.
I do want to kind of touch base a little bit about the song that you recently released. Let's talk.
Okay, yeah, for sure.
I mean, I was looking through the posts, and I was curious, you know, to see what you were mentioning with these pictures, and one of them was like, I guess like your perspective of what the song was about was in regards to like a long distance relationship, right?
Yeah.
Like how was that? Like how did you tap into that whole part of yourself to, because you said this happened a few years ago, right?
Well, it happened a while back. It's a while back. Yeah. But you know, it's so funny, like it's crazy because it's those moments in life that really defined you. Mm-hmm. And I like to revisit them when I write. I'm like, whenever I start writing lyrics and I find myself being inauthentic or like kind of just throwing shit together, I kind of remind myself, I'm like, well, now I'm losing the essence of the song. Mm-hmm. So Let's Talk was the first song where I wanted to be as authentic, as raw as possible, because as artists, you know, you don't want to just like, it's hard to put yourself out there. You know what I mean? And be like, this is what the song is about. So I'm like, I'm going to try that this time. I'm going to just say what the song is about. It's literally a long distance relation. I was, you know, dating this, my girlfriend at the time. I was moving up to NorCal for college, went to UC Davis. And this was at the height of me starting a band, you know, and this was at the height of me dating, of us dating. So I was homesick as shit. Like, I didn't even want to adapt to my new environment. I wasn't even giving it a chance. I was miserable, you know? I was just like, fuck, man, I miss my girl, my fucking band's back there. I'm here studying. Like, what the heck am I doing? And it was really rough on me to try to, like, you know, focus on school and stuff. And I remember, like, you know, some of the, you know, conversations that I had with her were very like they filled that void where I was like, oh, that's right. Like, I just like, I forgot, like, you know, I forgot what it was like, you know, talking to you is bringing me back. Like, I'm excited to come back, you know, looking forward to it. You know, I can come visit, you know, next month or, you know, in 2 months from now. And it was just like those little conversations in her voice that really brought comfort, you know what I mean? I'm like, oh, all right, like I can fucking do this, all right, and try to call her like every night or whatever. And so that song is that conversation. So like, and now I'm going to dive into the technical side of the song. The song starts off with dialing numbers, And that was like her number because I memorized it because I called it, you know, right? So much.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I was going to put her number, but then I realized you could listen to the dial tones and if it blows up, I don't want people calling her and be like, oh, yeah, you're the girl on the song. So I was like, maybe I shouldn't do that. And so I put in like my Google phone number. So if you trace the dial tones, it'll be my Google phone number. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so the song starts off with dialing her number and then it goes into a ringtone and the song is the conversation. And then at the end, it's like it's the conversation that I'm thinking of telling her and thinking of how it's going to go and telling her and me actually expressing like, hey, I'm fucking miserable. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know if this was the right decision. I miss you. I want to be like with the band and whatnot. And like, this is a lot. And then at the end of the phone call or at the end of the song, it's like, you know, it's someone picking up. So it's just an imagined conversation and then her actually picking up. So so it's a lot of thought went into this song and like the lyrics are, you know, just that like state of being like, I don't know what I'm doing. I wish, you know, I could be there. So it's kind of like that text, like, hey, can you talk? Like, let's talk. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's, man, dude, that's the origin.
That's cool. Especially with a song. Cause I've talked to other artists every now and then. They're like, well, I just wrote the song because it was cool. And I was like, oh cool. I mean, that's fine too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But when there's a whole story and then you're playing around with it to try to make it, you know, you were creative with it.
Right.
You know, exactly. And there's like a whole story.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I wanted to try something new because all my other songs, like there was thought, you know, and I did put meaning into it, but I never explained it or really shared that, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So like, this was one of those moments where I'm like, all right, like if I want to practice being real with my fans or whoever's listening, I'm going to be real. You know what I mean? And so that's why I wanted to like share with like what the meaning behind the song, you know, and like actually explain the story and how I broke it down and the phone number and like the answering at the end and everything. Cause I feel like that's what, you know, I forget who said it, but it's like people cling on to stories. You know what I mean? More so than the, you know, whatever the actual product is, like people, you know, connect more with the story than whatever the product is, the song or whatever. So
I'm just going to say with what you just said, in case like, you know, the website Genius, the one that gives you like a breakdown of the lyrics, they heard it here first. Social Primate exclusive.
There you go. Exactly. Exclusive. Yeah. Well, I'm telling you, this is the first time I've explained the song. You know what I mean? You know, aside from friends and stuff, but like, you know, this podcast got the exclusive. So
you heard it here, people. Nah, but that's great, man. Again, I always like hearing stories where, I guess in general, when people just have to go through things to kind of get to where we are, because at the end of the day, that is what makes us, you know, and we're either going to adapt to it, which is what anybody does in any position. But obviously we're not adapting to, you know, and fucking people over. That's a whole different, you know,
right. Exactly.
Especially like there's just been some weird stuff going on in the music scene. And I know people have brought it up, like, you know, some random sexual abuse or harassment. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's weird. I hope that kind of shit gets settled out,
right?
You know, and we should help each other,
right? And I feel like we're a community, and that's, you know, what I try to build in all my shows, and I think at the end of the day, it's just looking out for one another and being authentic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, and you know, that's it. But I agree, like, you know, it is kind of disappointing and stuff, but, you know, there's a lot of great movements that are happening that, you know, are, you know, providing platforms for people to share their experiences. And I think, you know, that's one of the good things to come out of a lot of these negative situations. So,
yeah, no, that's a great point. You know, it's those silver linings that do come out of these things, you know, regardless of how horrible they can be, you know, not saying that you have to have the horrible to get the good.
Right.
You know, but, you know, life tends to find a way to showcase these things and just find ways of voicing ourselves, you know?
Right. Exactly. But, exactly.
Dude, thank you so much for making the time to come out here again. I really do hope people check out your music and continue to support you. For those people who want to check you out, what's the best place for them to reach you?
Right now, the best thing would be my personal Insta handle, which is Johnny Cisneros with an extra S. I tried getting it without an S, but it's not possible. You know, there's a lot of Johnny Cisneros profiles out there. I don't know where the heck they all came from. but I'm the only one on Spotify. So that's something that I cling on
there
to.
There you go.
Yeah. But yeah, I just all my handles are Johnny Cisneros with an extra S. So that's the best place.
Awesome, man.
Yeah, well, music video comes out next week, so be on the lookout.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's gonna be fun. Yeah, man. I'll try to make it out to that pool
party.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure, cool. Man. For sure. I'll send you the address. So
sounds good. Well, again, thank you for making the time. And again, I hope you continue doing your thing. And if fucking everything locks down again, man,
take
your time, make some more music.
Yeah, man. I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on. This was super fun and so game to do another one, man.
Okay, man. Next time we'll arrange it so it's face to face.
Oh yeah, for sure, man. For sure. Sounds good.
All right, dude. Well, you have a good night.
You too. Peace. Thanks,
everybody.
Me on.